Hey everybody, if you want to tell the world something or sell the world something, head on over to Squarespace because they're going to help you build the website of your dreams. Say you want to sell some custom merch. Well, you can set up your online store. Whether you sell physical, digital, or service products, Squarespace has the tools you need to start selling online. So go to squarespace.com/stuff right now and you will face a free trial. And when you get ready to launch, use our offer code STUFF and then you'll save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. How could you go wrong with Squarespace?
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you? Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Tran Bryant. Chucky? Chuckles? Chucks? Chucks or whatever.
Chuck Tran's new.
I had something that I was working on in my head, but it got pushed out by the 8 million other things that I have to keep in my working memory.
Another nickname, or?
Yeah. It was a good one, too. I think it was really gonna knock everyone's socks off.
Chucklet?
No.
Jerry, like that? I heard that?
Yeah.
That was an LOL.
Yeah. She's getting a lot freer with the laughs these days, huh?
Either that or she's moving her chair closer and closer.
Or she's on LOL Cats right now and we're just not.
She's not even listening.
Yeah. Chuck.
Yes.
We're talking about addiction today.
That's right.
Do you remember in the Is Science Phasing Out Sleep podcast, which, strangely enough, comes out today on the day we're recording it, but this will be released like 5 weeks later?
You talked about recording this.
We talked about doing addiction, and lo and behold, here it is. So really, if you think about it, we are on track in real time, but in podcast release publishing time, it seems like there's a big lag.
True.
But we're giving people what they want, right?
That's right.
Addiction.
Or what we want.
Did you like this article?
Yeah. Did you know that there are many stories about addiction in our society today?
Yeah. Wasn't this like the most rigid article of mine you've ever read?
Oh, you wrote this?
Yes.
I'm just kidding.
Dude, it was, I went back when I read it, I was like, it was very scientific sounding. Like it could have been on the National Institutes of Health website. And it was very bland. And there was one thing I remember going back reading, I didn't pull the trigger on. We're talking about addiction and researching it compared to our views of addiction like even 20, 30 years ago, like in the 80s.
Right.
God, can you believe that was like 30 years ago, 1980?
Crazy.
Yeah. That whole Nancy Reagan Just Say No campaign scared the bejesus out of a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
But it also had a very negative impact as well, in that it so grossly over-exaggerated the effects and the addictiveness of drugs.
Yeah.
That for kids who were, I guess, gutsy enough to go ahead and try the drugs that they've been warned against.
Gutsy.
Once they tried them and found out that they weren't, you know, they didn't turn into like a donkey.
Right.
As Nancy Reagan told them they would.
Sure.
Then they were like, well, I wonder what other drugs are going to do. You know, they get a little more bold and courageous.
So are you saying that the Just Say No to Drugs campaign may have had the reverse effect on people who actually tried drugs?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I'm saying. And it's not just me saying that. There's a lot of consensus in the addiction field, which is, you know, multidisciplinary, that this Just Say No campaign, or any campaign that over-exaggerates the effects of drugs and deviates from a straight science-based reporting of what addictive substances can do to you, can have a negative impact, a
Absolutely.
Reverse effect.
Well, you'd think we would have learned our lesson from Reefer Madness back in the day.
You would definitely think so. You know that whole dope fiend thing?
Yeah.
Chuck, it's funny that you bring up Reefer Madness and the dope fiend thing, because that was the way, for a period, that people looked at addicts. It was a major character flaw.
Right.
Right? But before that,
it was just no big deal.
Well, there was no such thing
right.
as addiction up until like the late 18th century.
It was called How Things Are.
Exactly. Did you see that little thing I sent you about the funeral of a Boston minister's wife in 1678?
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to read it, was it?
So there's this really cool paper, if you ever have some time to kill, which sure. I know you never, ever, ever do. But it's a 32-pager by a guy named Harry G. Levine called The Discovery of Addiction, Changing Conceptions of Habitual Drunkenness in America.
What year?
It sounds really boring. I think it's like 1978. But this guy's tracing the history of addiction.
Uh-huh.
And he's saying, like, prior to the 18th century, the end of the 18th century, there was no such thing. Like, people drank
right.
because they wanted to get drunk.
Sure.
Right? So in 1678, people in America drank their faces off, Chuck. E.g., at the funeral of a Boston minister's wife, mourners consumed 51.5 gallons of wine. And think about
how many
it.
Mourners?
How many could there be? It's 1678 in Boston. There's like 50 people who aren't like Native American in, right. in the continental United States or what would become.
Well, maybe there were 51.5 people and they drank a gallon
maybe
each.
Maybe so. And then, at the ordination, not a funeral, an ordination of Reverend Edwin Jackson of Woburn, Massachusetts, guests drank 6.5 barrels of cider, 25 gallons of wine, 2 gallons of brandy, and 4 gallons of rum.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was just for the guy becoming a minister.
You know, our Boston listeners right now are like, that's right.
They're like, whoa, that's wicked awesome for
it's a wicked
historical
visit.
Facts. So, and then in the 18th century, there was everybody's just drinking for fun. Then in the 18th century, some people are like, you know what? I kind of have to have 4 gallons of brandy.
Right.
Help me.
Yeah.
And then we started to get this idea that there was such a thing as addiction. But it wasn't the person. It was on the substance, right?
Yeah, it's the absinthe or the opium. You know, those were like the drugs of choice back in the day.
Right.
That's the problem. Those things are evil and they're bad.
Right. And actually, opium addiction was so widespread. Did you see that little sidebar?
I did not.
Opium addiction, opium was everywhere, right? Like you could get it in any kind of tincture or tonic for any kind of malady
sure.
whatsoever. And so many middle-aged women became hooked on morphine and opium. That it was seen in the late 19th century as a woman's problem.
Oh,
like
really?
PMS or menopause.
Interesting.
That's how people viewed addiction for a while.
Huh.
But it went from the substance to the person, the character flaw, the dope fiend, right?
Well, I thought it went from the person to the substance.
No, it went from the substance to the person.
Right.
So it went from, it's the problem of the substance to the problem of the person. It's a character flaw, they're a dope fiend. And then finally, we arrive at the idea that addiction is a disease, a chronic disease, and a person who is addicted is a sufferer, not a fiend.
And that's where we are now for the most part.
Right. But we still don't fully understand addiction. We have a pretty good view of it, right?
I feel like a lot of things with the human body we explain, we always lead in with like, they sort of know, but they sort of don't.
Well, it's that point where all the pieces are on the table, we just haven't put them all together, remember?
Do you know why, Josh?
Why?
Because the human body is a miracle.
It is.
It's a big mysterious miracle.
Nice.
I mean, when you think about it, really, about all the things going on in the brain and the body and the fact that, you know, it's wrapped up in bones and skin.
Yeah, that sounds like intelligent design to me.
Well, there you have it.
Do you remember your theory of what happened to the Neanderthals?
Didn't I say they froze?
No,
they got thirsty? Yeah, they got hot and thirsty and they died.
All right, Chuck.
I stand by that.
So the whole point of addiction is it hijacks the brain's reward system, right?
Yeah, the limbic system, and that's exactly what it does, Josh. When you are, you know, born and you're a human being, you learn very quickly that, you know, you have to survive by eating and sleeping and taking care of yourself. And that's because it triggers the limbic system into shooting a little dopamine out, and your body says, hey, I like that. I need to do that again.
Right.
And that's what drugs do, except they do it 2 to 10 times as much, and it's false. It's
right.
fake.
Dopamine's like the doggy treat of anything with a brain.
Yeah, so if you can get 10 doggy treats
yeah,
immediately,
just, you know,
instead of the
something.
One, then you take it, and then your brain says, boy, this is great. I could get used to this,
right.
and it does.
Right, and since we learn, we're pretty much hardwired to learn from that release of dopamine to repeat that behavior, like reproduce or exercise or eat.
Yeah.
if we're getting 10 times that amount, we pick it up even quicker.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, okay, well, this crack cocaine makes me feel really good, so I'm going to try that.
Well, you need it more.
Right.
And when it goes away, it makes things a lot worse than just, oh, I'm sleepy because I didn't get enough sleep.
Well, we should say also that the current view of addiction, the brain disease model,
yeah,
right, states that just because you try something doesn't mean you're going to become addicted. The process, or addiction, is a process.
Right.
And a person goes from a user, crosses a threshold at some point, and becomes an addict. So a user and an addict are not synonymous.
No.
They exist on two different parts of the spectrum of addiction, or spectrum of substance use and abuse, right?
Use and abuse. Those are the two different words.
Right. So, well, you summed up the way that addiction works pretty succinctly, Chuck.
Well, it becomes physically addictive, basically. You develop a dependency on this shot of dopamine, this huge shot of dopamine,
mm-hmm,
and your body needs it all of a sudden, and you lose control.
Right, and we should say that drugs generally, like all drugs of addiction, hijack the reward system.
Yeah.
We've talked about other drugs, I can't remember, in some other podcast, that don't necessarily work the dopamine. Therefore, they don't necessarily produce addictive properties.
Right.
Right? But those that do hijack dopamine transmitters, they either stimulate dopamine's release and or they bind to dopamine receptors and prevent its reuptake.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So you got a bunch of dopamine release and you got a bunch of it staying in between your synapses longer.
Right.
And then, like you said, you become dependent on that. You want that feeling.
Well, your brain does without, even if you don't even know this is going on, mm-hmm, your brain is saying to your body, well, you need to go out and get more of that because that was really awesome.
Right, because your reward system is, it's there to motivate us to do stuff or to do stuff since it's the reward system.
Yeah.
So yeah, like you said, your priorities become reprioritized and drugs get to the fore or whatever that substance or behavior is, right?
Well, yeah, you always hear like the hardcore abusers of heroin or cocaine. It literally, they say, it overtakes your life to where your job is to every day get the money that you can find the drugs,
right,
so you can use the drugs.
Right,
it's a full-time deal.
And so you've got the hangover withdrawal. That's where your dopamine, basically, your brain's like, okay, I sense that something artificial is going on, so I'm going to stop producing as much, and you're going to have to go through a horrible little period. That's the withdrawal or hangover, right? Then you've got physical dependency, and at about this point, you've crossed over into addictive, being an addict.
Yeah.
You're not a user anymore once you have physical dependency. And that's where, because your brain's not producing that dopamine naturally any longer, and the withdrawal or the hangover is so bad that you can't stand it, you will do more. And at that point, you're like Krusty the Clown with moon rocks.
Right.
You're just getting back to normal.
Yeah.
You know? Now you're physically dependent.
That's the key. I'm not sure if that's getting through to all, because I can picture people out there looking concerned and bewildered right now. Your brain actually stops producing dopamine.
Mm-hmm.
If it's getting it, in an unnatural way, it goes, you know what? Well, I don't need to make it anymore.
Right. Well, there's enough of it out there floating around already.
It's just so messed up. You're literally tricking your brain into, mm-hmm, doing something that it should be doing naturally.
Right. And that's why, with a lot of drugs, getting that high, is harder and harder and harder and harder.
Sure. Well, or easier. There's that flip side too, which I thought was interesting.
It is. And I don't fully understand it. I don't feel bad because I don't think science fully understands it either. But
right,
that's two symptoms of physical addiction. Either you need more to get high, or you need far less than you ever did before.
I would think if you're an addict, you'd want to choose the second one.
You'd be like, man, I can get high off of $2 worth of heroin rather than 10 like I used to need.
Unfortunately, you don't get that choice, though.
No. Now, because of this, because your brain has been basically hijacked by this drug, and I guess we probably shouldn't anthropomorphize drugs, not actually hijacking anything, but because your brain's reward system has been reprioritized to serve this drug.
Thank you.
Yes. the whole point of treating addiction, and I actually wrote a companion article on this, how rehab works. It was pretty interesting.
Was that based on your experience in rehab?
Yeah. No.
Not true.
The point of treating addiction is in most cases to just completely discontinue use, which is called abstinence, right?
Yeah, for most all addiction, abstinence is the way to go. Except for, of course, like eating addictions and stuff like that.
Right. And sex addiction.
Yeah, they don't want you to never have sex again.
No.
We'll get to that. I have a problem with sex addiction.
Okay.
Not I have a problem, but I have a problem with everyone saying all these athletes are sex addicts because they cheat on their wives.
Oh, yeah. I would think that it's probably the most exploited addiction ever.
Yeah, for sure. So, Josh, we're talking about addiction. What are some of the symptoms of addiction? How do you know if you're an addict?
Well, there's two types.
Yes.
There's physical and behavioral. And I should say those two types are specific to substances of abuse, right?
Yeah.
You can have and or physical or behavioral if you're doing like coke or heroin or drinking. With behavioral addictions,
like
compulsive
gambling.
Behaviors, it's just behavioral. But that doesn't mean it's any less addictive. Person's any less addicted.
Or harmful to, you know, your life.
Right. But we said one of the physical symptoms is that you either need more or less of the drug, right?
That's right.
That's a physical symptom. Then there's a lot of stuff that you could easily guess. Trouble sleeping, sweating, hand tremors, nausea, physical agitation.
Yeah, that's if you don't have the substance in your body.
Right.
Those are the withdrawal symptoms.
Basically, your body's telling you, like, go do more.
Yeah.
Because we don't feel good right now.
And you get that from everything from alcohol to cigarettes to caffeine.
Mm-hmm.
Caffeine headaches are supposed to be pretty bad.
Right.
I've heard people that try to kick Diet Coke. It can be pretty awful.
I've had caffeine headaches before. They're not that bad, but I have heard of people who really suffer from them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the physical stuff, really it's using more or less or just using to get back to normal.
Right.
That's physical addiction. And then, you know, anything that happens to your body as a result of using or abusing a drug.
Yeah.
That's physical.
Yeah.
Behavioral, which is also called psychological symptoms, is the stuff that happens to your life, basically.
Right.
So, and, like, what are they?
Well, it's you may have tried to quit doing whatever this behavior is, whether it's gambling or overeating or sex, and you're not able to, so that's one of the traits.
Yeah.
So you're not going to have much success there. Or maybe you spend more time doing it to the point where it's like, you know, you might lose your job.
Uh-huh.
Or go broke, or something like that. Those are all behavioral traits.
Yeah.
What else?
Well, you basically you're still using the stuff even though you know it's having a harmful impact on you or your life or others.
Or you might stop doing stuff that's good for you. Like, I used to be a jogger, but then my sex addiction became so great I don't even jog anymore.
Right.
Now I just have sex.
Right.
All the time.
And play professional football. Because of this brain disease model that we talked about, because of these symptoms, the view of addiction as it stands today, the most widely held model is the brain disease model.
Yeah.
And the basis of that is that addiction is a chronic disease, right?
Right.
So as such, just like, say, asthma or tuberculosis or whatever, you're going to have flare-ups.
Yeah, relapse.
Right. Yeah, it's a relapse with addiction. Mm-hmm. And so if you go into treatment, you need to have, like, booster sessions as well after you're cured or clean or whatever.
Well, yeah, that's sort of the basis of AA, right? You still got to go to those meetings.
Right. Which is why I think it's so radically successful. Yeah. That and the LSD and the coffee.
Right. Yeah. That should be out by now, I think.
Yeah.
Otherwise, people can go, what?
I need to get to AA.
I had an AA joke, but I'm not going to tell it.
That's good, Chuck. We've both grown up so much, haven't we?
Yes, in the past 30 minutes.
Hey, everybody. It's time you heard about Squarespace. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own website. Whether it's an online course or custom merch, Squarespace has you covered.
That's right. Courses is a great program. You can start with a professional layout that fits your brand, upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills, and tailor your course with a powerful Fluid Engine editor.
That's right. With Fluid Engine, which is a next-generation website design system, by the way, it's never been easier for anyone to unlock unbreakable creativity.
That's right. And don't forget the commerce side, because after that, you can charge a one-time fee or you can even sell a subscription.
Yeah. So turn your creativity into income with Squarespace courses. And right now, go to squarespace.com/stuff for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
What else we got here, Josh? Behavioral psychologists, they used to think that, I thought this was really interesting. They sort of understand addiction a little bit, but they used to think that if you just tried drugs in the first place, drugs or alcohol or any kind of addictive substance, then there was just something wrong with you. But there's actually genetic basis for even that. Not even whether or not you get addicted, but whether you try it to begin with.
Well, yeah, it's not just that. Like, genetics is one of a number of risk factors. There's also, like, your susceptibility to peer pressure.
Yeah.
Your feelings of self-worth at that moment or at that period in your life. There are, like, if you have anxiety or depression, that's been shown to increase the likelihood that you're going to try drugs.
Yeah.
So it's not just like a kid's like, yeah, I'll try this. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
That's how they used to see it. Now they see it as like, no, there's some other comorbid factors going on.
It's both nature and nurture.
So like a good example would be like, if you start having sex to increase your sense of self-worth, that could lead to a sex addiction. That low self-esteem would be a risk factor that led you into your sex addiction. Right.
Or if you're depressed and you just self-medicate.
Right. Or if you tried drugs and you're like, wow, I really, really like these.
Oh, that's another one for sure.
Right. So we were talking about physical and behavioral symptoms, right? Again, under the current brain disease model of addiction, basically the double whammy is psychological dependence.
Yeah.
Because,
which can be just as bad.
Right. Because it has not only an effect on the person, it has effect on the society as well.
Yeah.
So, like, the person's life can be ruined by addiction.
Sure.
But they may also commit crime to feed their addiction.
Right. Or they break up their family on a personal level.
Or both.
Or commit violence.
Right.
Other acts
of
malfeasance.
The worst one is psychological or behavioral.
Yeah, for sure.
Which makes both substances of abuse and compulsive behaviors, addictive behaviors, equally bad.
Well, yeah, and what that means is you can't say, you can't be one of these hardliners that just says, you know, if someone wants to go out and kill themselves on dope, then that's their business.
Right, well, yeah.
Because there's a lot of other things going on.
It's a great argument against it. But
other impacts.
Right, but is prohibition the answer?
Well, it certainly wasn't with alcohol, was it?
No, it did not work.
You know why? Because no one stopped drinking.
Yeah.
Prohibition didn't really go over too well.
So, Chuck, you want to talk about some specific drugs and behaviors that people get addicted to?
Yeah, we've talked about meth a little bit and what a stupid thing that is to try, right? What was that in? Our big anti-meth rant. I think it was when we did the meth labs crime scene cleanup.
Yeah, yeah.
Methamphetamines, the good news is the use is going down, it looks like.
Yeah, which surprises me. I would have thought it would be steady or still going up.
Well, maybe people are starting to realize that it's not very smart.
Yeah.
But they actually studied brain patterns, Josh, of long-term meth users, and they found that 50%, up to 50% of their dopamine-producing cells were damaged or just shot.
Yeah.
So you literally, I mean, I don't know if they can regenerate, do you?
That remains to be seen. Remember, there's that whole study on MDMA that got it outlawed in the first place about serotonin levels being able to regenerate.
Right, right.
I don't know. I don't think anybody knows yet if we're capable of doing that. We've not been studying it long enough, I think.
Let's get some stats going, too, while we're doing these.
But, yeah, I was going to say what's encouraging about meth prevalence is that it's cut in half. People who have used it in the past month has gone down from 731,000 in 2006, and this is in the U.S., to 314,000 in 2008. That's half of what it was.
Yeah.
That's great. That's significant. In 2 years, sure. That kind of dropped. So, yeah, I would say that the anti-meth campaigns are working.
Or they're all dying.
Yeah.
Which is possible.
Yeah.
What's next?
Prescription drugs.
Now, those are on the rise.
Yeah, they're probably the most abused drug in the United States because everybody's on them. There's a huge problem with the elderly population.
Right.
Basically getting hooked on meds.
Sure.
There's a huge problem with the adolescent population, basically getting hooked on their grandparents' meds. And there's been a fourfold increase in people checking into rehab who are on prescription medications.
Right.
Within the 21st century, within the first decade. Four times as many as there were before. And in 1998, right, 2.2% of people seeking treatment for any kind of drugs were on prescription drugs.
Josh, also with the scripts, as I like to call them, prescription drugs, in 1998, 2.2% of people seeking treatment reported abusing the pain relievers.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2008, 10 years later, 10% reported abuse.
Right, and that's just among people who are seeking treatment. I mean, I think
supposedly need it.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons why prescription drugs are so abused is because, well, they're legal, technically, and they're socially accepted in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah, totally.
You know, people don't look at them as like a blanket drug. They look at them as all these different little drugs, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Robert Downey Jr. used heroin, so he was, you know, this lawless scoundrel, but Chandler Bing gets hooked on back pills because he had a bad back.
From tennis.
And it's sort of dismissed.
Yeah, you know, Jodie Foster said she would never work with Robert Downey Jr. again after
Home for the Holidays?
Yeah.
Was he messed up during that? Yeah, that was right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
That's a good movie, though. It's a shame.
Is it? I never saw it.
Yeah, it's good. It's a Thanksgiving movie. You should rent it for Thanksgiving.
Speaking of heroin, right?
Yes.
It apparently is a lot more socially acceptable than it was before, but it's still pretty much like a junkie is a junkie in the U.S. Nobody's like, oh, he's just a junkie. It's like he's a junkie. That's kind of a huge deal.
Well, they say that 23% of people who try heroin become dependent on it. So that's
pretty substantial.
Yeah, that's about a quarter.
But at the same time, it's surprising, though, if you were raised in the 80s, because you would think that 108% of people who try heroin become hooked on it.
Yeah, I remember the one big one that they used to say is if you try heroin just once, you're physically addicted to it.
Yeah.
That was one of the big campaigns for a while.
Same with crack. They said the same thing about crack as
you try it one time and you're addicted.
Right.
Yeah.
In the U.S., there's actually been something of an increase from 2007 to 2008, according to the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, from 153,000 people aged 12 and older in the U.S., who said that they'd used heroin in the past month.
Really?
To 213,000 in 2008. So there has been, I guess that is substantial, especially if you look at the population of heroin users, that tiny amount. That's kind of, that's a big increase, actually, now that I think about it.
You got cocaine and crack. Sister drugs.
You.
Josh, from 2002 to 2008, rates of past month cocaine use among kids declined. From 0.6 to 0.4%, which is good.
Sure.
And it also dropped among young adults 18 to 25. So it seems like those drugs are sort of on the wane a little bit.
Yeah. And again, if you look at meth, prescription drugs, well, painkillers especially, heroin, coke, crack, all of these have an effect of targeting your reward center.
Oh, yeah.
Producing that high, and you're learning to repeat this behavior, right?
Yeah.
Again, this can also happen very strongly among compulsive behaviors like sex addiction. And Chuck, before you go off on sex addiction, let's say that according to the National Association of Sexual Addiction and Compulsivity, the NASAC, obviously, there's about 3 to 6% of the American population that suffers from sex addiction, right?
Which is the real compulsive behavior that's diagnosed.
So, Chuck, sex addiction, go.
Well, there is such a thing, but it's just so overused. Like you said, you know, Jesse James is a sex addict. It's just, these are men of privilege is what it is. Tiger Woods, Jesse James, Brett Favre. Yeah. They're guys that are in the position that they can have sex with whoever they want, whenever they want. And a lot of guys will take the opportunity to do it. Doesn't mean they're sex addicts.
No.
And like you said earlier, or we may have even cut it out, I think the bad thing that it does is that it gives them sort of a free pass because they're just helpless to it.
Which yeah, is supposedly,
a bunch of allegedly.
Yeah, it is, really. I mean, basically, it seems like a defense for poor character.
Unless, exactly. Unless all these guys are in that 3 to 6%.
Right. And again, I think, I'm sure that there is like an actual sexual addiction.
Yeah.
Right. Viggo Mortensen had it in 28 days.
Yeah. For 3 to 6% of the people.
Right. So, but, and that's sad that there's probably a lot of people out there who need help or who actually are sex addicts and
right.
people just don't believe them because
sure.
it's like, you're full of it. I don't believe Brett Favre either.
Right. And like that's
Favre.
Unfounded as of yet. Brett Favre is, but. And the other thing with sex addiction, too, that we should point out is that, like many addictions, it's not even about the sex anymore. And apparently, once you are a sex addict, you're not even getting the enjoyment out of it anymore.
Yeah, which sucks.
Yeah, I would say so.
So I think, like we said, the point of sex treatment, sex addiction treatment, is to restore the person back to a point where they can enjoy sex.
Yeah.
Without being addicted to it. So it's not abstinence,
sure.
it's having a healthy sex life.
Right. And the same goes with binge eating disorders, which is about 1 to 3% of people have a binge eating disorder.
In the general population.
Right.
If you're obese or you seek weight loss treatment or help with eating,
yeah.
the population is far higher. About a quarter of people who are obese and seek professional help for it have binge eating disorder.
That makes sense.
Pretty much what it sounds like. It's like binging and purging, which is bulimia, but without the purging part.
Right.
Right?
Binging and binging.
Yes.
And gambling, Josh, is another compulsive behavior that I think has risen since internet gambling has become more accessible.
Mm-hmm. And another name for gambling compulsion is ludomania.
Oh, really?
Ludomania.
Interesting. 15 million people, they say, display some sign of gambling addiction. Is that in the U.S., I guess?
Yeah. I think in this article originally it had like 18 million or something like that. No, 2 million. So I guess it's gone up. Because
well,
that was a recent stat that I looked up today that you just read.
Yeah, and I actually looked up one today that said 2.5 million people are gambling addicts. So there may be a variation between a gambling addict and people who
display some sign of gambling addiction.
I guess so. Alcohol, Josh. We haven't even talked about that yet.
No, we haven't.
I got some stats for you. And these are staggering because alcohol is the one. I mean, most of these other things we talked about, aside from the prescription drugs or illicit drugs that you have to, you know, get illegally. But alcohol is the one that you can buy at the corner store. And not surprisingly, it's the biggest problem.
Yeah, I'm glad you found this, too, because I had trouble finding some stats. So lay them on me, String Bean.
Oh, 43% of U.S. adults have had someone related to them who is presently or was an alcoholic. Isn't that crazy?
That sounds a lot like the kid who says that you wouldn't know his girlfriend because he met her at camp and she lives in Canada. That sounds like that kind of stat.
Does it? 3 million U.S. citizens older than 60 abuse alcohol or require it to function normally. And that's going up. You mentioned your grandparents' prescription drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Grandparents are like the baby boomers now.
Right.
So as the baby boomers have aged into, quote-unquote, the elderly range,
mm-hmm.
a lot of them are still alcoholics and pill addicts and, you know, more so than their parents' generation was.
Right.
Or were.
Yeah. What else? You got any more on alcohol?
Yeah, I have a couple of, I mean, I've got a bunch of good ones. I'm seeing which ones are good. Men are 3 times more likely to be alcoholics than women.
Wow.
Did you know that?
No.
It's kind of surprising. And if you are happily married, you only have an 8.9% chance, whereas if you are single or have a bad marriage, you are 30% more likely to become an alcoholic.
I can see that.
Yeah,
especially if men are 3 times more likely to be an alcoholic, I could see somebody's wife saying, like, you need to stop drinking as much.
Yeah, exactly. And I've got one more really sad one. 500,000 children aged 9 to 12 are alcoholics
yeah.
in this country.
They call them the party kids.
Oh, really? So sad. I always forget about Drew Barrymore. Remember her little...
She was an outlier.
You think so?
Yes, she was the again, Nancy Reagan, 80s. She was the poster child for Nancy Reagan's Just Say No campaign.
Yeah, but she was drinking and doing cocaine and when doing she was like 12.
Yeah, and she was like the only kid who was in America who was doing those things.
Okay, I thought you meant that
And it was like 8, actually, I think, that she was doing coke.
I got you. I thought you meant that her story was exaggerated.
No, I'm just saying like yeah. Like on a graph, she's like way out here.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you always forget about that now, though, with her, because that was so...
Yeah, she's definitely cleaned up.
Well, she's cleaned up, and I think she can go out and like have a good time now. I think she had her demons when she was a little kid.
Yeah.
Which I can't imagine being a kid and being an alcoholic.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, that's the second podcast in, I'd say, this month that she's come up in.
Yeah.
Yeah, roller derby and then this one.
Yeah.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on. Hey friends, did you know that it's estimated that 85% of all customer service interactions are automated?
Yeah, it's true, and customers are the lifeblood of all business. So you probably don't want to put that responsibility in the hands of a robot. And that's why thousands of business owners call Ruby and hire them.
That's right. Ruby is the virtual receptionist company who screens, transfers, and takes messages 24/7, all while making your customers feel special.
Yep, you definitely don't want to hire a subpar front desk person. And with Ruby, they engage with your callers in a conversational way, just like your best employee would.
That's right. Finding someone who cares about your business as much as you do feels impossible at times, but the team at Ruby are experts in providing the best customer experience and turn every ring into a relationship.
Yep, this year can be your best year yet. Small, efficient changes can make a huge impact on your bottom line.
That's right, and Ruby answers all of your calls live from right here in the U.S. They'll take messages, answer questions, route calls, and much more. Visit ruby.com, or better yet, give them a call at 844-900-RUBY.
So, Chuck, you have a pill addiction.
Sorry.
Oh, we should also say that physicians tend to see alcohol withdrawal as far more dangerous physically than even heroin withdrawal because of the symptoms it produces.
Yeah, they have
it
pills.
Can kill you.
Should we talk about this now, the pills?
Yeah, I was going to say, if you have a pill addiction, what's the best way to treat that? With more pills.
Right.
That's the human answer to things. Let's throw a pill at it. And there, we actually have come up with some pills to treat addictive behavior.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I know they have one called disulfiram, and it's sold under the name Antabuse.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one they give you for alcohol that basically you take this pill and you drink even a little bit, and it makes you feel awful.
Yeah, like you basically, it does the opposite of your reward circuit.
Yeah.
It punishes you.
Yeah.
And you learn the hard way not to drink anymore.
And apparently you don't get used to that, so it's not like you can be on this pill and just kind of fight through it. It doesn't work that way.
No. There's another one called naltrexone.
Yeah, I found that one too.
And that one's used to treat alcoholism as well. But basically, it's an opioid antagonist.
Yeah.
Which means that it doesn't allow alcohol to give you that inflated sense of self-worth like a gun does, you know?
Yeah, I think most of those, affect the opiate receptors, right?
Yeah, but strangely, so then there's also nalmefene. That's an opioid antagonist, just like naltrexone. So they should both be able to treat alcoholism.
Right.
But strangely, naltrexone has shown most promise in treating alcoholism. Nalmefene has shown the most promise in treating gambling addictions, even though they're the same type of drug.
You know what else they use that for?
What?
Shopaholics.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I guess that's...
I think it just cuts down on the thrill, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Any sort of compulsive behavior like that, it looks like it might target.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It is interesting. And then, of course, you can just go after the genes. right?
Yeah, they're coming a long way in targeting genes. And what they don't think at this point is that there's like a single gene that they can find. They think it's probably like a combination of genes.
And it's probably also largely epigenetic as well, too.
Yeah, well, you should explain what that means again, just in case people didn't listen to that one.
How could they not have?
I know, that was a good one.
If you didn't, go listen to Can Your Grandfather's Diet Shorten Your Life? Basically, we found through epigenetics that it's what makes us isn't just our parents' genetic contribution.
Yeah.
We can actually affect the way our genes work, turning them on and off and amplifying them and lowering their frequency. By the stuff we do, including drugs, drinking, the way we eat.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much everything has an effect.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, you pointed out, which I thought was really interesting, is not only are there gene combinations that make you more susceptible to this, if you're not susceptible to it, it's not like you just are lacking those genes. There are actually genes that make you less susceptible to addiction.
Right. So, like the ALDH2 gene... people who have two copies of this gene don't become alcoholics as easily as people who have just one or don't have it at all.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
That is very weird.
And if you have low neuropeptide Y, which is a hormone, if you're a mouse, I should say,
right.
you're probably not going to want the booze as much as your fellow mice.
Right.
Yeah.
I did find another interesting one, too, about relapse rates. They've even kind of pegged it down to that level. They found that a variant of the opioid receptor gene ASP40, you have a lower rate of relapse with alcoholism if you have the ASN40.
Really?
By 26% to 47%. So even if you try to quit, certain genes will say you're more likely to relapse than others.
Huh. So just give up.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of relapse, there was some interesting tidbit that we left out about heroin relapse.
What'd we say?
In 2004, get this, the entrance rate for heroin treatment, right, in the U.S.?
Yes.
For the fifth time was higher than the entrance for heroin treatment for the first time.
I believe that.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
That's
It's really hard to kick, I guess.
I would think so. But try again.
Or go watch Trainspotting and never try it in the first place.
Yes. Or watch Sister Act 2 while you're high on heroin, and I'll bet that does the same thing.
That has a similar effect as Trainspotting.
Oh, I'll bet it's horrific.
Back in the habit.
Yeah. If you want to know more about drugs and addiction in general, we strongly recommend you read this strangely prim article.
Was this early on in your career?
Yeah, it's pretty early.
Yeah, I was a little stiffer back then, too.
It's called How Addiction Works. You can find it by typing that into the handy search bar at howstuffworks.com. And while you're doing that, try rehab, too. Interesting one.
Yeah, we should tackle that at some point, too.
Maybe we will. Something happened to me throughout this podcast. Since I said handy search bar, that means, of course, it's time for listener mail.
That was the brakes being applied.
Okay.
Because we have a small bit of administrative detail here, Josh, at the onset to plug our new app for the iPhone that is coming soon.
I'm very, very excited about this.
I'm playing with it right now because I was lucky enough to get a beta version because I work here. And you can access all of our podcasts, video and audio. You can, when you click on our big dumb faces, you can access every single episode we've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to it right there.
Mm-hmm.
The new episodes pop up automatically. You can go to our blog through there. You can go to Facebook and Twitter through there. You can watch our video podcast from our Stuff They Don't Want You to Know and Coolest Stuff on the Planet.
Or you can just go back and stare at our faces all day, too.
You can do that if you want.
Yeah.
It's also got a huge, huge repository of articles from the website.
Yeah.
HowStuffWorks.com.
Yeah, and they're broken down into their chapters as well. It's really easy to navigate. Like, we created a new way to access the site and all of the related content for the iPhone, like for a mobile system.
Yeah, they did an awesome job with the design. I was like, I wasn't sure at first, but it looks really, really awesome, and it's, like you said, it's easy to work and free.
Yes, I'm very excited. I can finally go to sleep when this thing finally comes out, so looking forward to it.
And no more excuses about not being able to listen to our show, because if you get the app, you will always be able to listen to the show.
Exactly. So you can enter the App Store on your iPhone or go into it via iTunes and download the How Stuff Works iPhone app. Free of charge. Gratis. Now,
back to our regularly scheduled program.
Right.
Then I'm going to call this an update from Sarah, the amazing 13-year-old fan.
Awesome. Yeah, I saw that yesterday.
You know, my goal is to eventually do this podcast through graduation for Sarah. And we just have updates from her from the age of 11 to 18.
Yeah.
That's my goal.
I wrote her back.
Oh, you did? Mm-hmm. Jerry, did you? She did not. So lame. All right, this is from Sarah. Hey, guys. Chuckers, Josh, Jerry, and Frank the Chair. I haven't chatted with you in a while, so I'm going to tell y'all what's been going on in my world. School started about 2 months ago, and believe it or not, I actually like it. Since I'm in the eighth grade now, I feel like no one looks down to me. They didn't really anyway, since I'm 5'8".
She is so cute.
Isn't that crazy? She's 5'8". Mm-hmm. She's like almost as tall as I am.
Yeah.
This school year will be full of fine arts, which are my favorite. In choir drama, we have been working on Seussical Junior, which is a musical-based work, musical based on the works of Dr. Seuss. I'm having a ball in that class. I get to act, sing, and dance, three of my favorite things.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, y'all are my favorites. Y'all are on my favorites list, too. In honor of this unique musical, I was wondering if you guys and gal would consider doing a podcast on Theodore Geisel, a.k.a. Dr. Seuss.
So when I wrote her back, I was like, I'll have to run this by Chuck, see what he thinks about it, but I'm totally down with that.
Well, we covered him on the webcast.
Remember? I know.
And he was just, I mean, I loved him anyway, but mm-hmm. once he really got into his history, he was pretty awesome.
So you want to?
Yeah, let's do it for sure. In school, we have a cooking class. In our first class, we made a meal. We have about 10 students in this class, so we split off into three groups. One group, not mine, was assigned to make cookies. They made the batter, but messed up and put a quarter cups of salt in the cookies instead of a teaspoon of salt. That's so crazy.
Yeah.
The girls baked the cookies, and when the teacher tried them, she came up with a brilliant idea. We should give them to the eighth grade boys. Let's just say the look on their faces was really hard to describe. It was hilarious watching the boys run to the water fountain. I can't think of anything else to say. Thanks for reading. From Sarah, the now amazing 13-year-old fan.
Who started out as the amazing 11-year-old fan.
Yeah, that means I'm almost the amazing 40-year-old podcaster.
So I'm reading this book called A Consumer Republic.
Uh-huh.
And I just found out, did you know, that home ec classes are the earnest result of the consumer empowerment movement of the Depression?
Really?
Yeah.
Did you take home ec?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. It was one of my favorite classes, actually.
That's awesome, actually.
It was like, wow, this classroom looks like a house.
Yeah.
And I like that.
And we kind of just get to cut up and make cookies and eat them.
Exactly.
Did you take shop?
I took that one, too. I was much more intimidated in that class.
Like wood shop?
Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't have, some schools have car shop. We never had that. Did y'all have that?
We had one. I never took it.
Auto shop?
Yeah, those kids could take a car apart and put it back together like that.
I wish I would have.
Yeah. I wonder how much more I would have liked shop had I been as comfortable then as I am now around people missing a finger. I could have been a changed person.
I got nothing else.
Well, if you have a story about losing a finger, we want to hear it. It better be for real, though. None of this Lou Bega stuff. Wrap it up in an email and ship it post-haste to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Want more How Stuff Works? Check out our blogs on the howstuffworks.com homepage. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Are you thirsty? Well, Richard's rainwater is caught clean before it even hits the ground. Rain is naturally pure, so there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. Richard's rainwater contains no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of still rainwater or the cold pressured bubbles of sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And for a coupon, text STUFF to 251-292-8887 and receive $2 off a 12-pack case of Richard's Rainwater. Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.